Welcome to the Hangar Deck Podcast. We bring amazing aviation talk and interviews for the aviation enthusiast. You are listening to www.thehangardeck.com with host Pitchlock Pete and the Hangar Deck crew. This show is brought to you by Leading Edge Aviation Consultants. Pre-flight is complete and the crew is strapping in. Stand by for Pitchlock Pete and the Hangar Deck team at the Hangar Deck Podcast. Welcome to this episode of the Hangar Deck Podcast.
In 5, 4, 3, 2. Hey, welcome back to the Hangar Deck Podcast. I'm back in the studio. I had a wonderful adventure October 7th and 8th, and I'm trying to play catch up with all of the great friends I've met and the recordings. The recordings are off the chart. I Atlanta Warbird weekend was October 7th and 8th, so my co-host Andy White and I took a road trip all the way down, invited by the commemorative Air Force Dixie Wing of in Atlanta to come and record the 75th anniversary of the Tuskegee Airmen. I cannot believe it. It was fabulous. We got to talk to a whole bunch of Tuskegee Airmen and record some stories from these great, they're just American heroes. And I just love talking about this stuff. And I can't wait to get you guys, our listeners out there, some of this great content. So stay tuned on Stitcher Radio, Google Play, or iTunes for these great episodes. So, you know, I'm back in the studio, and I've been trying to coordinate this interview for a couple of months now with a great guy. He's an author and a historian of World War II, you know, bomber group stuff, specifically the 8th Air Force. And I finally got him on the phone all the way from California. I'd like to welcome to our show Mr. Steve Snyder. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing fantastic, Pete. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's great. I'm very happy that we finally were able to connect and talk about your book and talk about some of the stuff you've done. But before we get there, can you tell us a little bit about yourself for our listeners so they understand who Steve Snyder is?
Sure. Well, I was born right after World War II in 1947. I was actually born in Pasadena, California, home of the Rose Bowl. And then when I was one, we moved to a nearby city, San Marino, where actually the first mayor of San Marino was General George Patton's dad. So there's a little tie in there of World War II.
Yeah. Wonderful. I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, he was from San Marino. So I went through the San Marino school system and then went to UCLA, graduated from UCLA, and always wanted to live at the beach. So after I graduated, I moved to Seal Beach in 72. It's in Orange County in Southern California, and I've been there ever since. So I've been there a long time.
All right. Seal Beach. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. It's a quiet little town. Its nickname is Mayberry by the Sea. It's mainly single family homes, has a little main street, and it's real quaint and a great place to live.
I'll trade you Southern Maryland for Seal Beach.
Well, I used to get to Maryland quite a bit on business. I was in sales and sales management for 40 years, but the last 36 years, I worked for a company called Vision Service Plan, VSP, which provides vision care as an employee benefit that corporations buy for their employees or offer their employees. It provides for eye exams, glasses, contact lenses. So I traveled extensively for the last 25 years on that job, and you know, mostly on the East Coast. So I'd get to New York and D.C. area and, quite a bit.
Yeah. So you retired after 36 years in sales, right? And What year was that?
2009, I retired.
Well, God bless you for traveling. I don't think I've done, well, anything for 36 straight years, but that's pretty awesome. So we're talking to you about this amazing story you've written. You're the author and now self-proclaimed historian of the book Shot Down in World War II.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the book is about?
Sure. Well, my dad was a B-17 pilot, and he and his crew were shot down over Belgium on February 8th of 1944. So the book goes into detail about what happened to each member of the crew and about all the Belgian people that risked their lives trying to help them. It's also really a history of the B-17, the 8th Air Force, and the air war over Europe, as well as the story of my dad and his crew, but also a lot about those courageous Belgian people that actually saved my dad's life and tried to help some of the other crewmen.
I mean, my arms are chilled. I got goosebumps just listening to you already. So you've had a passion for aviation then. Is that true, or just a passion for World War II?
Well, it was more of a passion for World War II, although since I wrote the book, I attend air shows all over the country signing copies of my book. And so attending these air shows, I've gotten into aviation as well. I'm not a pilot, but I've really gained an appreciation, not just for the B-17, which was my love from the beginning, but all the warbirds that I see at these air shows across the country.
They're living history, aren't they, Steve?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's just so exciting to see, hear those planes and see them fly.
I mentioned the Atlanta Warbird Weekend, and we kind of chatted about that before we started recording. But the B-17G aluminum overcast was there, and I was thinking about you the whole time, knowing that we have been talking for a while. The ball turret works, and this example the EAA has it's an amazing airplane. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, I love them all. I've seen the aluminum overcast. I've been up twice in the Collins Foundation 909, but I haven't been up the aluminum overcast. Although it came to Long Beach, which is right next to Seal Beach, earlier in the year, and I'm proud of the fact that the EAA sells my book on their B-17 aluminum overcast tour around the country.
Well, it's funny because I was in line. I bought a shirt off their trailer, and sure enough, I looked up, and there's your book shot down right in front of me. I was like, hey, I'm talking to that guy next week.
Yeah, it's I'm pretty honored and thrilled at the reception it's received, because the Collins Foundation sells the book on their Wings of Freedom tour around the country, and also the Liberty Foundation sells it on their B-17 Madras Maiden tour around the country. So it's pretty special that they think enough of my book that they'll take it on tour with them.
So when did you get the idea to write your dad's story?
Well, that's a good question. As we talked about, I retired in 2009, and growing up, I knew the basics of my dad's war history. I knew he was a B-17 pilot, and he was stationed in England with the 8th Air Force, and his plane was named the Susan Ruth after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas.
Wow.
And yes, that's pretty special. And, he was shot down. He was missing in action for 7 months, but he evaded capture. And so I knew the basics, but when I retired, then I really had the time to delve into my dad's war history in more detail. And at that time, I had no intention of writing a book. My parents had kept a lot of material about the war years, and I wanted to go through that and learn more. And there were two items that were really significant. One was a diary that my dad wrote while he was missing in action about his plane being shot down. It was absolutely riveting.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was, and that's in the book. And it's my dad should have been a writer, I think.
Well, he passed that on to you, Steve.
Yeah. Actually, it was really fortunate because he lost that diary. But a couple years after the war, there was a army lieutenant that was there with the U.S. occupation forces in Belgium, and one of my dad's helpers gave his diary. It was just handwritten on little pieces of paper to this army lieutenant who, looked up records and mailed it to my mother. And so it's amazing how it even got back to my parents.
Yeah. So that's a pretty good story when you do the research. And I'm sure you did a lot of research on this, right?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. the other item I was going to say that was really significant were all the letters that my dad had written to my mother while he was stationed in England. And reading those are just fascinating. And that's when I just became totally fascinated with the story of my dad and his crew and became my passion. And that's when I really started doing research. I started reading book after book about the air war over Europe. I went on the internet and just spent countless hours doing research, downloading declassified military documents like mission reports and bomb group and bomb squadron diaries, war crimes reports. And
Yeah. So there's tons of stuff. I mean,
it just went on and on.
You know, I don't know if you've heard, but we did an episode way back when we went down to Warbirds Over the Beach and talked to screenwriter John Orloff about this rumor about a movie about the Mighty Eighth. And, you know, John told me, he's like, you can't write a miniseries or a screenplay about the Mighty Eighth Air Force and the B-17s during the war because there's so much information you would not capture it in 8 episodes. So, you know, your father was in which bomb group?
He was in the 306 bomb group stationed at Thurlow, England, which is about 60 miles north of London. I'm actually a board member of the 306 bomb group, and I just finished my 2-year term as president of the 306 bomb group. I'm still on the board as immediate past president.
Wonderful. That's great stuff, man. You know, so the 306th, you know, can you give us a little highlight about that day? You know, I know we want everybody to read your book, but I'm fascinated with this piece of the story about your father getting shot down over Belgium.
They were on a mission to Frankfurt on February 8th, and they dropped their bombs successfully. But their bomb bay doors got hit by flak, and they couldn't get them back up. And that caused a drag in the plane. They lost airspeed. They fell behind the formation. And they were singled out by 2 Focke-Wulf fighters. And in the ensuing air battle, they were shot down. 2 of the crew were killed in the plane. The other 8 were able to bail out. And 3 of them were killed a couple months later on the ground. Some became POWs. There was another guy like my dad, who wasn't with my dad, but they both evaded capture. And then we're finally liberated when the U.S. armies came up through France after D-Day into Belgium.
Wow.
On September 2nd.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. That's an amazing story.
It's interesting that both those Focke-Wulf fighters were shot down. One was piloted by Siegfried Merrick. It crashed and he died in the plane. And the other was piloted by Hans Berger, who was able to bail out and made it through the war. When I was doing my research one day, my wife asked me, why don't you try to find the German pilot that shot down your dad's plane? Which I thought, you know, was a ridiculous, crazy idea.
Yeah.
You know, like, how in the world am I going to do that?
You did you do that? Did you
yeah.
find this
well,
guy?
You know, like a good husband, I did what she told me to do, and lo and behold, I found Hans Berger.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and fortunately for me, he became a translator after the war, so he speaks English, and he gave me some wonderful insight that's in the book about what it was like to go up against the 8th Air Force. Hans just celebrated his 94th birthday last week. I called him. I always call him on his birthday and wished him well, and we've developed a friendship.
That's wonderful, Steve. Oh, my gosh. That's, you know, when you get to talk stories and find out, you know, adversaries on either side, but when the war is over, everybody comes together, and this is your father's a hero to me, dude. I'm telling you, I'm a veteran, 20 years Navy. I flew patrol bombers and you know, for the P-3 Orions, and that's where my heart, you know, in aviation comes. And learning about the men that went before me, this your father's a hero. I mean, and all the men were heroes. Now the 306, did they have? You know, we just went down there to the Atlanta Warbird weekend for the Tuskegee, you know, anniversary. Did the 306th have fighter escort back then?
Well, some, you know, as you know, at the beginning of the war, 8th Bomber Command thought that all those heavily armed B-17 flying fortresses could defend themselves against the Luftwaffe, but sadly that was not the case. And then even when they gave them fighter support, the P-38s and P-47s, I didn't have the fuel capacity to escort the bombers all the way deep into Germany. You know, that really didn't occur until external fuel tanks were added to the 47s and the introduction of the P-51 Mustang right at the end of 43, beginning of 44. So my dad, the mission he was shot down, they did have some fighter escort, but the problem is their escorts went off and went after some German fighters and left the formation unguarded. And that's one of the reasons why my dad's plane was shot down.
Wow. Wow. This is an amazing story, Steve. I can't wait to talk to you a little bit more about it. But before we continue, we're going to take a short break. We're talking with Steve Snyder, author and historian of his father's story in a book called Shot Down. We'll be right back at the Hangar Deck Podcast.
Aviators Hotline has been bringing buyers and sellers together for 39 years. The aviation community has come to rely on them to assist in the buying and selling of single, twin, and turboprop aircraft, as well as parts and services. Published monthly, in print and digital format, Aviators Hotline is positioned to be your true marketing solution with multimedia options. Visit aviatorshotline.com or aircraftforsale.com for more information.
Hey, we're back, and we're talking with Steve Snyder, the author and historian of the book Shot Down. We're talking about Steve's father's story of the 306th Bomber Group of the Mighty 8th Air Force during World War II. Now, Steve, the name of the airplane was named after, you know, your sister?
Right, my oldest sister.
Your oldest sister, Susan Ruth, you know, shot down in Belgium. Your dad, survived the crash, right? Or they bailed out.
Well,
right?
he bailed out.
Right.
No one was in the plane when it came down.
So what happened after that? He evaded capture. Did he get captured? How did that all pan out after being shot down?
Okay. Well, he came down in some trees, and his parachute got hung up, and he was dangling 20 feet off the ground and couldn't get down. Fortunately for him, a couple young Belgian farmers came to his rescue before the Germans got to him. They went back to the farmhouse, got a ladder and a rope to help him down out of the trees, and they told him to hide until nighttime, because it was about noon, early afternoon when this happened, and they thought it was too dangerous to try to move him during daylight. So they came back at night, took him to one of the farmer's parents' farmhouse. He stayed there one night, but they thought it was too dangerous for him to stay there any longer with those German patrols in the area. So a Belgian customs officer, Paul Kilqueen, came and got him on a tandem bicycle, took him to his house. And then after that, he was moved from place to place. And how long he stayed at any given spot depended on how brave the people were who lived there and how dangerous the underground thought it was for him to stay there. He might stay one night, he might spend 6 weeks. And finally, he got tired of hiding. So he decided to join the French resistance and start sabotaging German convoys.
I love it. This is
Can
great.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. No, I can't. The part of the story just keeps getting better and better. It's like, when you talk to World War II, guys, if you're lucky enough to meet a World War II veteran now, they're all 90, like you said, 94, 95, 96. They have some amazing stories that you don't hear today. It's amazing. The French resistance, huh?
Yeah, it's called the Mackie. They were small independent groups of guerrilla fighters that were spread around France. They received airdrops from the British. They got supplied, and then they, through coded messages over the BBC, they got their instructions. But basically, they tried to harass the Germans, sabotage railway lines, disrupt communications, assassinate German officers, things like that. And there's several episodes in the book where they talk about, encounters that my dad had with the Mackie and the Germans.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And then finally, 7 months after he bailed out, He heard that there were some army troops in a little nearby village of Trelon, France, and he went over there, and it happened to be Patton's 3rd Army had come up through France after D-Day, and so he went up to an army major, identified himself, and then eventually made it back to England.
That's great. And this whole time, your mom is probably a nervous wreck, not hearing from him. And you know, how was that? You said she, you know, he wrote a lot of letters to your mom, and she's got
right. Yeah, and then all of a sudden his letters stopped coming, and then she got a telegram from the War Department saying that he was missing in action. And
right.
Well, my dad, why he was missing in action, my other sister was born. So here's my mother with a one-year-old baby girl, an infant girl, not knowing whether her husband's, you know, alive or dead. So that had to be really tough on my mother.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine. During that time, it's just, you know, so many of our guys are over there and so much stuff is going on, you know. So, and I can only imagine communication back and forth is critical at that time to make sure your loved ones are okay. So you reached out to this German pilot, right? You're friends with this guy. You know, he's a Focke-Wulf 190, just had a birthday. You guys talk like once a year. That's amazing. Can you give us a little bit of more background on the Mighty Eighth? You know, to Susan Ruth, it was a loss, right?
Yes.
So the missions these guys flew, average, how many missions did they fly during the time within the 306th?
Well, it depended on what time of the war that you're talking about. During the early years, in 42 and especially 43, I mean, it was just brutal. The 8th Air Force just took devastating losses, not having those escorts. Even though they implemented a 25 mission limit in the spring of 43, it was still statistically impossible for an airman to complete 25 missions. So the average number of missions flown before being shot down was only 6.
Wow.
But these guys answered the call, you know, every mission, not knowing if it might be their last.
Yeah. That's crazy. Statistically, right. You're saying, 25 is just out of control. You know, your book is in some of my research on the book Shot Down, you know, it's on Amazon, and you have over 450 comments on your book, and not one of every one of them is it says you did a great job, you did a phenomenal job, you know, telling the story of this 306th bomb group. So I can't wait to get myself a copy and buckle down and start reading this thing. That's wonderful. You know,
the greatest compliment I can get or I ever get are from guys that, you know, fought in the 8th Air Force, and we had our annual reunion at the 306 last week while you were down in Atlanta. I was in Indianapolis.
Okay.
Our reunion, and one of the 306 veterans, he was a bombardier, read my book, and he came over to me and he says, "You told it like it was."
Wow.
And, you know, that just gives me chills when a guy who actually was there and went through it, you know, likes my book and gives me a compliment.
How big is the 306th group that you were the president of, that you're still on the board?
Well, we had just a little under 100 people at our reunion. I think it was 96, and we had 8 vets. The week before that, or the weekend before that, I was down in New Orleans at the 8th Air Force Historical Society reunion. A lot of the, most of the bomb groups don't hold independent reunions anymore.
Right.
There were about 40 bomb groups at the peak, but now there's less than 10 that hold their own reunions. Most of them just combined and go to the 8th Air Force reunion. But they had over 500 people there and 70 vets, so that was really cool.
70 vets still walking this earth, telling that great story. You know,
it really is a
melancholy, you know, type of situation if you get to talk to a World War II vet, especially a bomber air crew guy from World War II, because like you said, 6 missions, and I don't know, it's just you know, gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, but what they went through, you know, and it was dangerous and perilous from the time they took off to the time they landed.
Yeah.
Just not over the target.
Do we expect to see you maybe on the East Coast next spring? You know, this this whole warbird over the beach thing is pretty big, you know. They have the Gox Hill Control Tower.
That's at Air Power.
At the Military Aviation Museum, they call it Warbirds Over the
Military.
Beach. Yeah, yeah. It's a.
Yeah, I'd like to get to that one because that museum just started carrying my book in their gift shop. And Bob Hill is one of the B-17 pilots, flies out of there, and he says a pretty good show. I'd like to make it there.
I'll send you the contact information for the people over there at the Military Aviation Museum. They sure are. They have authors on the floor. They have. I got to interview a B-17 flight engineer / waist gunner. He's 95 years old, and he told us his story also. And you know, amazing, great air show reenactors there. You know, so we'd love to see you out there. Hopefully, we do this year.
I'm hopeful to make it. I'm starting to make my calendar now for next year. This year's kind of winding down. I just have one more air show. That's next weekend back in New Orleans. It's the World War II Museum's Land, Air, and Sea Festival. That's a good one. I'll be speaking all 3 days there.
Wow. So you do a speaking circuit also at these events and talk about the book or talk about just the time.
Yeah, I do quite a bit of speaking. I don't speak at all the air shows I go to, but I'm going to be making a little presentation on a stage each day at that. It's at the Lakefront Airport, which is really cool little airport there in New Orleans.
All right, cool. So if you're in the Lakefront Airport area next weekend, go look for Steve Snyder out there and the author of his book, Shot Down. Now, I want to know, what's the next project? Are you planning on a next project?
Well, last year, year ago in May, my son, who's in the kind of the film, he's an actor and had major film studies, and a friend of mine who's a motion picture cameraman in Hollywood. We went to Belgium and filmed all the locations that are described in the book, and then we went on to Munich, Germany, and filmed an interview with Hans Berger. And I'm just in the beginning stages of making a documentary about the book, so that's like the big project that I'll be working on this next year.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I know, you know, we had talked about your son being an actor and, you know, talking about that Captain Dale Dye movie concept that the good captain's putting together. You got to lean your son towards over there, you know.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, good. So we're looking for a documentary about the book Shot Down you know, all of the. What did you feel like when you went over there? How did you feel? Like,
well,
go ahead.
Well, I've been to Belgium 4 times, and it's just a thrill every time I go because a lot of the houses where my dad was hidden in when he was being hidden by the underground, and a farmhouse where that French resistance stayed, they're still there today. So you can see where, you know, this history took place. The schoolhouse where some of the guys were taken, that were captured and the Nazis interrogated them, is still there. There's a couple of memorials in the area, one to my dad and his crew. So there's a lot of history that's still there. It's amazing. First time I went over was with my parents, and that was really when it became personal in 1994, my dad showing me around. It's amazing, and the people there are absolutely wonderful. To this day, they're so grateful and so thankful still for America coming to their rescue and liberating them from Nazi oppression.
That's you know, you would think that would change in today's environment out there in Europe, but it's nice to hear that there's still an appreciation for our greatest generation and the men that and the women that, you know, paid the ultimate sacrifice to stifle those Nazis, but
without a doubt.
So
and they do a great job of educating the younger generations too about it to remember.
Yeah. Oh, cool. So what last couple of minutes, let's talk about your dad. What was your dad like post World War II?
Well, my sisters and I, we always compared him to John Wayne, or if anyone remembers the old TV show Gunsmoke, James Arness. He was a tall guy, 6'3". He played on the the squadron basketball team, you know, no nonsense guy, but a loving father. You know, he coached my little league teams and things like that.
Great. That's awesome. But, I'm a little league coach. Yeah, I know how that goes.
Yeah. He was a great guy. We had a wonderful relationship. I loved him dearly. I'm so fortunate. The last trip he ever took was in 2004. He wanted to go see the World War II Museum before he died. And so I accompanied him on a reunion trip for the Air Force's Escape and Evasion Society. And we went down to D.C. And the last trip he ever took, he died in 2007. He was at 91 years old. He wasn't the last crew member to die, but he was the oldest. And like, wow, you mentioned, you know, all the World War II vets are in their 90s today.
Well, my hat's off to you, Steve, for memorializing your father and his crew in the book Shot Down. You know, for our listeners, go out and get a copy. It's a fabulous read. I have not read it. I've read all the Cliff Notes on the on Amazon. I am ordering it right after I get off the phone with you. And that's the book Shot Down by Steve Snyder. Thank you, Steve. What would you like to say to our audience? The microphone is yours, sir.
Okay. Well, when I began my, when I first started writing the book, I thought it was going to be kind of a tribute to my dad, but I learned or discovered real quick, you know, it was not about my dad only. It was about each member of his crew, all the guys in the 8th Air Force, and really all the guys who served in World War II. There was no other event in history that affected more people than World War II. It changed the course of America and the world forever. And we can never forget the sacrifice of those brave young men who fought and died for freedom. It's our duty to remember.
It is. We need to tell these stories more in schoolhouses and in the history books. You know, as I said, I was able to interview some of the Tuskegee Airmen last week, and every one of them said the same thing. It's like every year a little bit less comes out of the schoolhouses and about World War II and some of the stuff. And even more concerning is World War I. There's not a lot of details discussed about World War I, and that's even a bloodier war to compare them, but you know. So
yep, unfortunately that's true. And it's really the goal or the mission of the 306 Bomb Group, and really of all the things I do, is to, you know, remember the air war over Europe, to honor the guys who fought it, and to educate the public, especially younger generations, about it.
Well, thank you very much. Steve, do you have a website people can go check out?
Yes, it's stevesnyderauthor.com.
All right, stevesnyderauthor.com. I'll put a link up on our Facebook page. I'll put it up on our website, www.thehangerdeck.com. For me here at the Hangar Deck, I have to say it's been a pleasure talking with you, Steve. Thank you very much for coming on our show. You know, this episode will be up very soon, along with all our other episodes at on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play. So for all of us here at the Hangar Deck Podcast, which is just me tonight, thank you very much, Steve. And
thank you, Pete. I really appreciate it. It's been fun. It's nice being on your show.
And I'll see you in Virginia Beach next year. How's that?
Okay. Sounds like a deal.
All right. Hangar Deck Podcast out.